The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, this will be an Empowerment Hour. We're going to give you the most comprehensive understanding of estrogen dominance, a major cause of cancer in men and women, specifically in women, to protect them from breast cancer. We know that we can control probably 95% of breast cancer, heart disease, stroke, blood clots, dementia. These are within our control, but we have to learn the real lessons, not the lessons propagated by the media. If anything, probably 90% of the messages in the media actually contribute to our problems, not resolve them. So stay tuned for that. Then I will be talking about why the attacks against bioidentical estriol, why is it under threat? Why something that is natural and non-toxic that could help turn off hot flashes and night sweats, could help a woman in estrogen balance, is actually being attacked, where that which is synthetic hormone replacement actually increasing a woman's risk of a heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, dementia, and colon cancer is being promoted. We'll deal with that. Food security. Right now, we're being told, as of today, something we've been talking about for some time, that food security risk if crop biodiversity is lost. You've heard us talk about the dangers of monoculture, of genetically engineered soy, corn, wheat. And yet, along with the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the World Health Organization, they are sponsoring a single crop without biodiversity. An enormous amount of biodiversity is being lost, and yet they're actually saying today, the world's largest group on the agricultural organization, that we need biodiversity. Why are they not promoting what they tell us we actually need? I'll deal with that. And then, as worlds collide at Cancun on climate talks, shouldn't we have more done on helping protect us against climate changes? Yes, we should, but they're not. I'll deal with that. But we're going to begin today's program with a guest who was shown to be extremely popular when he was first on in early September. He is Robert Scheer. At that time, we spoke more on the past with Reagan and Clinton, and he'll be visiting our office tomorrow. We'll be filming him for a major documentary we're doing on Greed Street, meaning Wall Street. And also, he'll be doing a public appearance in New York City this week, and we'll give you more details on that. But for the past 30 years, Robert Scheer has built a reputation as one of our nation's most honest and insightful political commentators and authors. He interviewed Nixon, Carter, Reagan, and Clinton, as well as many of the other leading political leaders of our time. From 1976 to 1993, he was a national correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He was reporting on arms control and national politics. He is a professor at the University of Southern California, Annenberg School of Journalism, and editor-in-chief of the Webby Award-winning internet magazine TruthDig.com. And we're happy to have him on today to talk about connecting the dots, because he is one of those individuals who can take 100 different points of reference, bring them all together, and show us how what we considered formerly disparate and unrelated are actually very much related. He is the author of The Great American Stick-Up, How Reagan Republicans and Clinton Democrats Enriched Wall Street While Mugging Main Street. Nice to have you back with us.
Great. You know, it's interesting when you say about connecting the dots. I think the problem with the banking is the same as the problem with health and, you know, food and the other issues that you're going to be raising. We can't assume that we have adults watching the store. We can't assume that because people are well-educated and have titles and, you know, the best and the brightest, that they're going to do the right thing. And unfortunately, our meritocracy has become inverted, and the more education that we give, the I'm speaking tonight at Harvard, which is kind of the scene of the banking crime. It's where, you know, a lot of the key people were trained, either as Harvard MBAs or in the law school or over in mathematics near at MIT, and to do the mathematical modeling that caused so much trouble on Wall Street. And, you know, this assumption we had that when we replaced the old ruling elite that was based on inheritance and bloodlines and names, the Rockefellers and so forth, and replaced it with people who tested well, that we would get the right answers. Well, we haven't. They turn out to be much more short-term in their greed, much more interested in career than anything else. And I think that's why we've had the banking meltdown. It's really quite depressing when you think about it, because we had assumed that if people got better educated and were thoughtful, and they'd come to the right answers. And in fact, in the case of the banking meltdown, they came to the wrong answer. They didn't think about how to make the system help people, keep them in their homes, increase jobs, improve the economy. Instead, they did what I think is basically what should have been considered a criminal scam, but they got to write the laws, and what should have been criminally taking people's homes and making them poker chips in the casino Wall Street was made legal. And, that's very depressing as a comment on the state of our democracy.
Well, I would accept that, but I would add that probably the chief architect at one point in American economic stratagem was the former president of Harvard, Lawrence Summers, who,
of course.
And then he, even to this day, is still the chief political advisor, though he's moving on. Now, I want to take a step back, if you would, please. Go back to the mid-1970s. At that point, it was rather accepted that if you put in your time and did your work in a company in the United States, that you could have security for life and retire with a pension, and adding your pension onto Social Security and keeping within a certain standard of living, you could reasonably expect to send your kids to college, have a quality life in your retirement. And then one day I got a call from my father-in-law, who said that after 30 years of working in the same brick company in West Virginia, that he was let go, and also that there was no money left in the pension. And I said, well, how's that possible? He said, well, a company came in and bought his company, a group of investors, and they used their pension money, meaning the pension that had been there for decades. They robbed it, but it was still legal. And now these people had no work, were in their 50s and 60s, had no pension, and this was at a time when it would be very hard to retool. I began to do a study at that time of who these people were, and there weren't a lot of them. The biggest five were Ivan Botsky and Saul Steinberg and T. Boone Pickens and Carl Icahn and Michael Milken. And then I tracked them, and from the mid-1970s till 2000, what they started caused the downsizing of more than 28 million jobs. That, to me, was economic genocide. And yet, instead of being pillared or vilified or at least held accountable, they were praised. They were oracles. They were great men of insight and wisdom. And this whole culture on Wall Street did not take into account what the impact would be on other people, including George Soros, who on 60 Minutes bragged that he did not consider the moral implications of how he made his money, including trading in currencies, would adversely affect other people. So my issue then is this, if you would address it. When we look today at a culture of greed that frequently is the underlying bedrock of the best and brightest educations at Harvard, Yale, and other schools. Not that all students subscribe to that greed, but an awful lot of them do, especially after Harvard got the wunderkind who founded Facebook. Then everybody wanted to know, well, if he made $1 billion, now worth $30 billion, the company is, and he owns the majority share, what can I make? And we have a whole culture now that came from someplace. The difference is that it was Bill Clinton who, along with a relatively few other people, not a great many, was able to take away the laws, the Glass-Steagall Act, and modify the Commodity Futures Trading Act, that allowed those entrepreneurs and those very, very focused and highly motivated individuals in Wall Street to go away from manufacturing, go away from stabilizing the economy to making money off money and outsourcing jobs. So would you spend a little time with us showing that the crisis we're in today, the home foreclosures, the repossessions, the drying up of malls, the debt load, had a beginning. And if we don't understand the beginning, then every time I hear Mark Levine screaming or Sean Hannity proclaiming that we've got to go back to Reaganomics, or we have some dunderhead like Sarah Palin, who if you got a lobotomy, you'd be smarter than her, saying, I just want to keep using Ronald Reagan as my what? What do you know about Ronald Reagan? None of these people have any sense of history. I want you to go back to the pro-Reaganomics now being spewed from the Republican media, particularly Sean Hannity and Fox and the Tea Party on that, the, who believe in that, and give us a real background on this so we are grounded in the reality that our crisis today was so easily understood, but we didn't have the moral courage, especially those who are liberal and democratic, to intercede. If anything, many of the Clinton Democrats actually were the architects of this. The forum is yours. Take your time.
Well, the reason I call it the Great American Stick-Up, the title of my book, is because I didn't think this had to happen. I think, you know, capitalism was altered in a very radical way. That doesn't mean it didn't have big problems. And, you know, we know about them, whether it has to do with environmental destruction or it has to do with the, you know, creation of, and justifies the means culture and so forth. But something very specific happened, and that, and you put your finger on it when you talked about the financial scams that became fashionable. Those scams basically require a political structure to support them. It requires lobbying. It requires changes in the law to make legitimate what ought not to be legitimate. It requires disregarding consumer interests. And what happened with Reagan, and I knew Reagan quite well. I interviewed him before he was governor, and when he was running for president, he was quite generous with his time. I think Reagan would be appalled were he alive today. Because Reagan started out believing in the New Deal. He believed in FDR. And the reason he believed in FDR is FDR saved his family, saved the Reagan family from starvation. Ronald Reagan's father lost his job in the Great Depression. The family was having trouble putting food on the table. And it was the New Deal and the sensible regulations of the New Deal that saved the Reagan family, and Reagan acknowledged that fact in his autobiography, Where's the Rest of Me? And what he said was that his father, unemployed, went to work for the New Deal. And Reagan used to argue, you know, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me because of esoteric issues and so forth. But what happened is that Reagan, as his acting career was fading, got a job with General Electric to be a shill for the company and promote the products. And General Electric back then was a company one could believe in. Reagan went to all of the big plants. He met with the workers. He met with management. And in those days, General Electric basically made products. You know, they made good refrigerators. They made good light bulbs. They were a highly unionized workforce. They, you know, did have people stay there for 30 years and retire honorably. They had benefits. And General Electric, like many American companies, changed. And General Electric became more a bank than a producer of refrigerators. And same thing happened with General Motors Acceptance Corporation. GE Capital got involved in the very same swindles, financial paper shuffling swindles that affected Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and the others. And Reagan was not around by then. But when the banking meltdown occurred in 07 and 08, GE Capital was responsible for two-thirds of the profit of the General Electric Company. And that company was in very deep trouble and had to be bailed out, in effect, by taxpayers. So you have Reagan building a a fantasy of unregulated capitalism based on his personal encounter with General Electric, which did not anticipate what happened to General Electric and what happened to other major corporations, which is they became financial swindlers and paper shufflers and working on the margins of the financial industry rather than developing better products. And so when Reagan came in, he had this wonderful slogan, which he got from the lobbyists for the big corporations, you know, get government off the backs of business and so forth. And he tried to put through radical deregulation. He tried to reverse the New Deal, sensible New Deal regulations, separating investment banking, where you're using supposedly the money of rich people, and it's their problem if it goes belly up, and we don't have to worry about it, and mixing it with commercial banking, which is supposed to be the hard-earned deposits of ordinary people and their mortgages, and that should be a conservative activity, heavily regulated, insured by the government. All that came from the New Deal. It worked out splendidly for six decades. And Reagan was started to, you know, was drinking the Kool-Aid from the lobbyists and said, no, we got to change all that. We have to modernize. He couldn't pull it off because we had the savings and loan scandal. And in the savings loan scandal, it was obvious we needed more regulation of these financial institutions rather than less, that we could not trust them to do the right thing. We had to save them from their own greed.
Lincoln Milken, savings and loan?
Yeah, and Milken, who you mentioned, after all, you know, he hit the wall and, you know, and disgrace. And so at the end of Reagan's administration, he actually held his nose and signed off on tougher financial regulations. But out of the Reagan Revolution came Wendy Graham, who he considered his favorite economist, and Phil Graham, who was a Democratic congressman who then resigned, ran as a Republican, and then ended up being head of the Banking Committee. And they were the high priest and high priestess of radical deregulation. I use the word advisedly, radical. Get rid of it, okay? And then you correctly point out it remained for Bill Clinton to implement this. The Republicans were solid in support of it. I don't want to let them off the hook. But it would not have happened were it not for Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton came in, and he was very much the opportunist, you know, very much in favor of what he called triangulation, win-win. And so he went to people like Robert Rubin, the few Democrats on Wall Street, and said, look, you know, why don't you guys like us? Why don't you support us? Why don't you give me money? You know, and they said, you know, because he said, you're with us on the social issues. You eat at the same restaurant, your kids go to the same private schools our kids go to, and so forth. You know, why don't you like the Democrats? And they said, oh, you have to get rid of these onerous regulations left over from the New Deal. They're hobbling us. They're not letting us be competitive in the world, and so forth. And Clinton went for it. And he brought Rubin in from Goldman Sachs to be his Treasury Secretary. And Lawrence Summers was Rubin's deputy.
And Timothy Geithner.
And Timothy Geithner. And they were off to the races. And they made a deal with Alan Greenspan, who was head of the Fed. And then under Rubin's urging, Clinton reappointed Greenspan to be head of the Fed. And Greenspan said, look, you do this, I'm not going to do to you what was done to Jimmy Carter, who got inflation. We're going to have low interest rates. And we had basically the Clinton boom, the Clinton bubble. And in the process, you mentioned the two pieces of legislation that were absolutely critical. Now, first of all, they passed the Telecommunications Act, deregulating telecommunication. As a result, the same thing happened to me that happened to your father-in-law. One day I got a little notice saying that my retiree medical from the Los Angeles Times no longer existed. Goodbye. And why? Because the Los Angeles Times, a marvelous newspaper under the Chandler family, had come to be owned by the Tribune Corporation and was taken into bankruptcy. Again, through pure greed, the LA Times still makes profit, but you wouldn't know it because it was acquired in these shell games and Sam Zell and other hustlers, and, you know, and there went a great newspaper, and they're now trying to climb out of bankruptcy, but it's a shell of its former self, that paper, as the other properties they own. And so after the Telecommunications Act, Clinton did something that I thought was extremely cynical, which was called welfare reform, basically ending the federal poverty program, the federal obligation to poor people, and we're now feeling the consequence of that in this recession very, very much so. We don't even know where these people are. 70% were children, people on welfare. We have no real accounting, and we do very little for them, and it's left to the tender mercy of the state. And then the two main pieces of legislation that caused this crisis that, as I say, did not have to happen because it involved gimmicks, financial packages, collateralized debt obligations, and credit default swaps that didn't exist during the whole long history of capitalism and should have been illegal. And if the mafia had come up with such a scam, these guys would have been thrown in jail pretty quickly. But instead, under Rubin and Summers and Geithner was a lesser player then, but under their with their urging and leadership, they passed the Financial Services Modernization Act, the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, which reversed Glass-Steagall, allowed the merger of investment and commercial banks. As a result, you got Citigroup. That was the first victor of
buying Travelers.
Combined Travelers and Citibank, and you got Citigroup, the biggest financial institution in the world, which is now still in the toilet, trading at less than $4 a share. But Rubin went to work for after pushing through the legislation that made Citigroup legal, which of course it would have been illegal under Glass-Steagall, made it legal, and then he gets a job with them. I mean, my God, when I was a reporter for the Los Angeles Times, if I went to a friend who had a restaurant and he offered me a beer, I would have a fight with the guy. I would say, no, I need to pay. I need a receipt. I can't take a free beer, you know, even though you're my lifelong friend and you own this restaurant, because I might have the appearance of a conflict of interest. Okay? These guys have no such restrictions. They go through this platinum revolving door, and Rubin gets a job, $15 million a year working for Citigroup, and he's there right through 09. He's there through the packaging of the Alt-A and subprime collateralized debt obligations, these securities that should have never been allowed, and the credit default swaps that were pretend insurance policies backing them. There was no there, and as a result, the Fed now owns over $2 trillion of this junk, and the banks are still drowning in this stuff, and the housing market is in miserable shape, and that's why we don't have consumption, and that's why we can't deal with the unemployment issue. And all of that was made possible by, first, the reversal of Glass-Steagall, the Financial Services Modernization Act, and a year later, in the closing weeks of the Clinton administration, he could have vetoed it, he signed off enthusiastically on something called the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, which said in Titles 3 and 4, people can Google it, you can look it up, you don't even have to buy my book, and you read it, it's very clearly laid out that these over-the-counter derivatives, these financial packages which can contain people's nest eggs, their dreams, their homes, their hope of retirement, there's something to pass on to their children, something never done in the history of capitalism, take people's homes and make them poker chips in a casino, that all of these things would not be subject, were exempted from regulation by any regulatory agency or any existing law. And Lawrence Summers was then the Treasury Secretary, the guy who then is rewarded by being made president of Harvard, and then, after messing up at Harvard, is rewarded by Barack Obama by being brought in as the top economic advisor in his administration. Lawrence Summers was the guy who pushed that through. And then when he was advising Obama, he was paid $8 million by Wall Street firms, $4 million from D. Shore, the hedge fund, and $4 million in speaking fees from Goldman Sachs and Citigroup and all these people. Goldman Sachs gave him $135,000 for one little half-hour lecture. And that's not considered a bribe. Why? Because, as the old Woody Guthrie song says, some rob you with a six-gun and some with a fountain pen. These people have robbed us with fountain pens, writing the laws they want.
I appreciate that overview. Just a few of my own thoughts. When we take a look at Wall Street's takeover of America's economy during the Clinton years, there was a very intelligent and forceful voice, Brooksley Bourne, and who said, we've got to look at these frauds. And she was told, for all intents and purposes, no. And she was confronted repeatedly, and finally she was just forced out with nothing being done about what she could have done. She could have told America in the media, wake up, there's a problem. But the very people who Clinton handpicked, and Clinton was fully aware that she was being subordinated, Brooksley Bourne, the very courageous, intelligent an attorney, She could do nothing for all intents and purposes. At the same time, we saw former Goldman Sachs chairman Henry Paulson, then heading the Treasury under Bush, grant the blank check bailout to Wall Street, and which you have called the greatest swindle in American history. Now that deal is done, the banks have made off with hundreds of billions of dollars. And how much did it actually help with our recovery? Well, I challenge that that helped our recovery. It helped Wall Street. But how much did it help us? So here's my issue. Here you have a man named Robert Rubin, and he was the main architect of the financial collapse. He goes virtually unscathed through all this. He has managed to dodge any criticisms for his role in Citigroup when he was a CEO, a horrendous corrupt bank that was behind the collapse of Enron and World.com and was knee-deep in the subprime mortgage and derivative scandals, a bank that received over $306 billion in guaranteed protection for its toxic assets, yet we find Rubin again behind the scenes in Obama's financial team. And so then you have to ask, well, if there's Timothy Geithner, why is he Secretary of the Treasury, given that while head of the New York Federal Reserve, he was responsible for the oversight of Goldman Sachs, which was packing derivatives with the expectations of their failure by placing counter bets to ensure higher profits in AIG and Citigroup, but failed on all accounts. Yet he, the man who was the overseer at the Federal Reserve at New York Bank, is now the chief person, the head of our Treasury. So most Americans believe that Obama, the presidential candidate, 2007, was a leader who, if elected, would stand up against Wall Street. We're left believing that through the eloquent rhetoric in his speeches and during the debates, that he was pro-people. Well, that's not the case. And even as we speak today, Obama has once again replaced Lawrence Summers with a person equally, if not as disdainful, in helping the average person. So I'd like you to take us to where we're at now. One final comment. In today's, In today's New York Times, there's two stories I would like to see if you see a connection to. Front page New York Times today. Lobbyist court potential stars of House panel, eyeing GOP a takeover, months of work behind the scenes to prepare a shift in power. Ernst & Young, the global accounting firm, hosted a fundraising breakfast late last month for Republican Dave Camp that drew so many donors, the firm's lobbyists had to pull extra chairs into their largest conference room. The day before, Mr. Camp was at a Capitol Hill townhouse owned by the founder of Online Leaders Alliance, raising thousands of dollars more. And then there was the dinner reception and fundraiser at Carmine's, a downtown Italian restaurant for Mr. Camp the same week. It goes on to talk about how, right now as we speak, the largest amount of money in an off-year election in the history of American politics has poured not millions, not hundreds of millions, billions of dollars into campaigns so they can own, commodify, commercialize a person. And I wasn't aware that a legislator, a candidate, or an actual representative of the House or a senator was a commodity. I thought they were there at some level, at some point, to actually even fake, if they couldn't be honest, that they cared about the people. This is showing that they're nothing more than bought and controlled tokens of the lobbying. On the other side of the paper, clear over the other edge, it says $750 million fine for drug maker of tainted goods. Quote, Glasgow in a settlement. It says to avoid a trial in this, quote, criminal and civil complaints that they knowingly sold contaminated baby ointment and ineffective antidepressants. This is the latest in the growing number of whistleblower lawsuits that drug makers have settled with multi-million dollar fines. Now, $750 million settlement, not the largest by any means. I've been tracking how many people on Wall Street, major firms, have settled based upon actual settlements, not charges. How many people in the in the pharmaceutical industry have settled for price fixing, fraudulent products, deadly products like Vioxx. and it's now over, are you ready for this, $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Virtually every Wall Street firm, virtually every pharmaceutical company has not dozens or thousands, but in some cases in the pharmaceutical industry, hundreds of thousands of lawsuits they've had to settle. So now I'm thinking, gee whiz, who do we entrust our health care to? These crooks, these pathologically serial offending pharmaceutical companies that right in front of us, in clear view, they acknowledge that they have been lying to us, manipulating us, giving us bad drugs, and yet the same FDA passes these drugs, and we are told by the Surgeon General and everyone to take these drugs, and then we're told that trust the people that go to the White House, and who causes the laws to be set, written, who gets to meet with the President and his staff to decide our health care plan or Wall Street reform plan, these very lobbyists who are buying legislators. Now, the lobbyists are buying legislators that cause laws to be enacted or taken away. Pharmaceutical companies and Wall Street companies are settling astronomical fines on a daily basis with no one asking, gee whiz, what have we become as a nation when virtually all the power players, the institutions we have historically trusted, are all engaged in serial crimes against us, and yet we continue not to ever discuss this ever in the media, of why we should trust any of these individuals or agencies, since they have been in such contempt of anything that is actually progressive, decent, or honest. The forum is yours. Final thoughts.
Well, you know, you put your finger on it. I mean, it's the corruption of huge amounts of money. You know, 2/3 of all the profit made in the United States in the last 5 years was made on the financial community. It was made by these big players. The rest of the people in the economy, whether they're doctors or they're restaurant owners or school teachers or anything else, they're scrambling for the other 1/3. The concentration of money, of power, of political influence, is something that, I mean, the founders of this country would have not even attempted a republic if they thought that would happen. They anticipated an agrarian democracy in which, you know, yeomen, the farmers, had the final say and knew what they were doing and could tell, you know, what decisions should be made and so forth. The free press that was guaranteed was the penny press, was the town crier, wasn't these massive, you know, networks of Murdoch and people like that who can just shape the debate and climate. And so, yeah, you know, we are at a point where the state of our democracy is, you know, is horrid. And you really have to wonder what claims can be made for free people and governing a free society when money is so powerful, and now the Supreme Court has opened the floodgates to money totally controlling our political system by defining corporations as an individual. I mean, my God, what an absurd characterization. And so, you know, you're absolutely right. It's a question of the corruption. And we see it, and they can handle the fines. I mean, countrywide, so they got a fine for Angela Mazzillo for 45. You know, so what? They don't care. You know, that's a chump change. And you know, so I think it's a very, very big problem. I mean, we all want to vote in elections and care and push this candidate and that candidate, but then it turns out your candidates are bought and sold. I mean, I was very enthusiastic about Barack Obama, and I looked the other way when he turned down public financing, and he said, no, I'm going to get private money, and he got most of the Wall Street was his biggest contributor. And now Wall Street, you know, saying, hey, the best defense is a good offense, so we're not going to just stick with Obama. No, we're even going to give more money to the Republicans now and really take back the Congress, and all bets are off. Well, there'll be no accountability, none. And they are financing this Tea Party movement. We have a phony populism of the right. We don't have a progressive populism because people are still lulled by Obama into thinking he's the great alternative and source of hope. And we're being betrayed. We're betrayed at every turn. And the smartest people in our society who test the best, go to the finest universities, end up working for the very firms that have these army of PR people and lawyers and hustlers who can, you know, sell anything. and buy off everyone. And it's a very, very sorry state of affairs. And then you're left with a few people, you know, like us, talking on, you know, basically small outlets, trying to challenge it. You know, and I wonder at the end of the day whether my writing books and everything just provides a cover for these other people with this sort of illusion that we have debate. When in fact, we don't.
Well,
you know?
We don't have a debate yet, but this broadcast you're on, the official radio station of the city of New York, WMYE, WPFW, the largest listened-to nonprofit program in Washington, D.C., KPFK in Los Angeles, and over the Internet, the largest audience on the Progressive Radio Network, because so many people, from Danny Schechter, Musho Kaku, to Jim Hightower, have come over here because they were so tired of copping out. They're seeing the cop-out of the Democrat that went Clinton-esque instead of really independent and objective and honest input. So your words do mean something, and we may not have any influence today. I voted for Ralph Nader because I just looked into Barack Obama's background before he became a senator, and I then looked at what he voted for, and I didn't see where he was populist at all. And just based upon just his record, I asked myself, what is the likelihood of this man who is pro-nuclear, pro-clean coal, a major spokesman for the coal industry, pro when he was a lawyer, pro-oil, pro-gas, pro-biotechnology. What is the likelihood he's going to turn all that around and look at the truth? And I said, I'll bet it's zero. Well, it's been less than zero. And so now we have to be honest, and hopefully the Democrats and liberals will take a look and say, okay, we bet on the wrong horse. Let's get this right so we can have a third party. We won't have it immediately, but in the next 4 years after Hillary becomes president and she does more privatizing and more corporatizing than her husband, then maybe we'll wake up. I hope we do, because your material, Chris Hedges' material, so many other progressives, we need those voices. And tomorrow you're going to be at the New York Public Library of the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center on Amsterdam Avenue with Joe Connison, who's a national correspondent for the New York Observer, to discuss the causes and consequences of the financial crisis and why the government is championing Wall Street instead of Main Street. It'll be at 7 p.m., sponsored by The Nation Books. And I'm going to get down there myself because I want to be there, A, to support you. I believe that we must support progressives. And that hopefully people in this audience will come there and listen to you and spread the word. So I want to thank you very much and for doing what you're doing, Robert Scheer. And we look forward to your lecture tomorrow in New York at 7 p.m. at the Public Library at Lincoln Center.
Thank you very much.
I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you all over the world. I'm Gary Noll. In a moment, estrogen dominance and how, by understanding what causes estrogen dominance, we can prevent cancers. We can save lives. Positive information that empowers. And I am a person who believes very optimistically in those individuals who are just now gathering insight, opening their mind, surrendering some of the allegiance they've had to the left and to the right. There are many good thoughts on the conservative side. There are many good thoughts on the liberal side. There are many good thoughts within the independent side and with the libertarian side. There are parts of all of these strategies that work, but not in total. That's why we must, in effect, cobble together new concepts, new truths to go forward. And we will. So as it gets worse, we get stronger. As more chaos occurs and people feel helpless and divert themselves more into bread and circus, we become focused like lasers on solutions. So I am optimistic, but not in the short term. By the way, to help the people in this audience who care about being wise about food scarcity and being able to store some food for themselves, the remainder of this week, I am allowing in my health food store bulk items, bulk grains and legumes, which can stay for years in dry, cool storage, in packets of 25 to 100 pounds, to be purchased at my cost. I'm doing this as a public service, no profit, because I want to help people. If you're lucky and you don't need to eat that food, then fine, save it, in case you do. I can't tell you how many people I've been filming, college graduates, MBAs, a woman who was married to someone high up with the World Bank, and today is virtually living in a home as a housekeeper with her two daughters, or otherwise she would be homeless. Now, that's why I believe we have to store. And you can also share what you have with others who you may come into contact with who themselves need to eat. And there's a lot of those people out there. How about 50 million in America right now? So you can go up at 89th and Broadway from now till Sunday, and that's it. And you can place an order. You'll be given a list, and then it'll come in the following week. And it's just my way of helping you get ahead of the curve. All right? The store number is 212-874-4000. I'm going to go to some calls. I am going to try to get my commentary in on Eschen and take some calls. The number for our calls here, 888-874-4888. Now, I was given one special today, and it's a good special. It's the Super Antioxidant. Over 30 different antioxidants in one capsule, vegan capsule. It's a kosher product, and you're getting 90 vegetarian capsules, but you're getting some very high amounts of antioxidants, vitamin A and C and vitamin E. And I'm talking about big amounts, like vitamin E is 200 units, vitamin C is 500, 10,000 vitamin A. Magnesium and zinc and selenium and copper and astaxanthin and quercetin and L-carnosine, L-lycopene, rosemary leaf powder, tocotrienols, raspberry leaf powder, citrus bioflavonoids, rutin, bilberry, red wine concentrate, grape skin extract, Chinese green tea, reduced glutathione, coenzyme Q10, N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, superoxide dismutase, taurine, pygnogenol, licorice root, broccoli stem, lutein, cabbage leaf, carrot, milk thistle, and bromelain, all those in a single capsule. So this I take in addition to the Berry Blast because I want it from the best possible sources at high doses and the most natural sources. So it's a combination of both. So this is the special today. You buy one super antioxidant and you get one free. All this money, all of it, goes to the Progressive Radio Network because we're the only ones that raise money. All the other programs don't have to. So this is the only non-commercial station in America that I'm aware of that you don't have to have any interruption in quality programming for fundraising. Call to get your special, the Super Antioxidant. Remember, why? Because the antioxidants trap the free radicals. When you trap the free radicals, that means that that free radical is not damaging your DNA. The DNA in your brain, your eyes, your lung, your liver, your heart, your musculature. That helps slow down and prevent the degradation of the cell, which leads to premature aging and the disease of premature aging. So the more you can do to trap free radicals throughout the day, the better it is. Now, not everybody can take Berry Blast throughout the day, all the time, but you can take a couple of these super antioxidants and give them to your kids. They're great, and they're absolutely essential, in my opinion, for making a difference in how your body ages and protecting your DNA. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now, let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hey, Gary. I just wanted to let everybody know that We, as you know, we are planning a wonderful, wonderful retreat, a one-week retreat, the first week of January. I do have a couple of slots that have opened up, and that's going to be, I'm telling you, this is going to be one of the best groups I think you've ever had down there. Very excited people, optimistic, really eager to learn about sustainability and how to navigate through these tough times. And boy, if anyone's listening out there, you've got the information here. I also want to let everyone know that I still have a couple of slots open for our one-month retreat. Also is going to be held in January in Florida. And this is for people who have had some chronic illnesses that conventional medicine has not been able to really help. Now, people are going to be in a controlled environment. They're going to be with you. You're giving up your entire schedule for the whole month to be with them. And they're going to learn more in that 1 month, I think, than they've ever learned about their life and how to better manage their situation. And it's just the most beautiful place in the world. They'll be getting food. Oh, my God. They'll be getting exercise, all based on wherever they are in terms of their ability to move their body. But the catch here is that I do need medical verification of their condition. That's been kind of the clincher here for some people. I need medical verification of your chronic condition so that we have that when they come down. So if you're interested in this, either one, the one-week retreat, what a way to start the year. That's the first week of January, or if you want to spend a whole month with Gary Null, give me a call. I'm at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198, or email me at whnn@aol.com. That's whnn@aol.com.
Thank you, Luann. We were full, but the people don't end up getting their medical verifications, and I will be filming the whole month. The whole purpose is to show what is possible with massive lifestyle intervention in changing a person's health. Now, to the issue at hand, and this is about estrogen dominance from life extension. When your hormones, by the way, anybody can watch today's program. I'm streaming live from our studio in New York over GaryNull.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com if you want to watch in studio. When your hormones are imbalanced, and that's what we really try to achieve every day on this show, the information we give, everything from digestion to your immunity works properly. You feel great, you look great, you have the energy of a teenager, your sex drive is normal. This is your body performing at its best. Hormone balance is created when the ratio of estrogen to progesterone sways too much one way or another. The most common extreme imbalance is estrogen excess in relationship to progesterone. This is called estrogen dominance. Now, real quick, the three most important ways you create an imbalance: stress, cortisol, that creates estrogen dominance. Being overweight, estrogen dominance. Eating a meat-based diet, estrogen dominance. And one more, being exposed to a lot of pesticides or eating regular produce, estrogen dominance. Now, two types of sex steroid hormones are estrogens and progesterone. There are three estrogens: B-estradiol, estrione, and estriol. B-estradiol is by far the most potent. It is 12 times more potent than estrione and 80 times more potent than estriol. Any overexposure to B-estradiol can increase your risk of cancer or all diseases. Estradiol is considered the good estrogen. There's only one type of progesterone, and it's considered a very safe hormone. Progesterone is called progestin when it's in a synthetic form. Now, estrogen and progesterone work in synchronization with each other as checks and balances to achieve hormonal harmony in both sexes. Estrogen and progesterone need the presence of each other in order to perform their individual functions. Estrogen, you got to focus on it. Maintaining estrogen balance can be difficult for many. For many decades of a woman's life, circulating estrogens are fluctuating and cause both good and bad influences. The primary role of estrogen is to maintain the growth and function of the uterus so that the sex organs can become adult-sized and prepares the uterine lining to accept an egg. Additionally, estrogen affects skeletal growth and skin, fat, protein deposition, and electrolyte balance. Men also produce a certain amount of estrogen. And then you have progesterone. Progesterone is the building block for many other major hormones. Other sex hormones are formed from progesterone, including corticosteroids, which are essential for stress response, electrolyte balance and blood pressure, and lastly, survival. Cortisol, DHEA, testosterone, and estrogen are all made from progesterone in a process that begins with cholesterol. Progesterone is the primary hormone of fertility and pregnancy. It is essential to the survival of the fertilized egg, and then the embryo, and then the fetus. In pregnancy, it prevents the shedding of the uterus lining. A drop in progesterone can result in a miscarriage, and some healthcare professionals are beginning to make a connection between low progesterone levels and the symptoms of fibromyalgia. Now, estrogen dominance, which is a bad thing, is generally not caused by one factor. As I mentioned a few moments ago, it's generally caused by several. But I would also say hormone therapy. Synthetic hormone therapy will definitely cause it. Environmental estrogens will cause it. Stressful lifestyle, glandular dysfunctions, and hormone imbalance. Now, from the time menses begins, and it's different times in different girls, until menopause, levels of estrogen and progesterone ebb and flow in a manner which promotes reproduction. At about 35 to 40, women reach the time of premenopause, which is when their levels of progesterone and estrogen begin to decline. Now, during this time, through about 50, there's about a 35% drop in estrogen and a 75% reduction in progesterone occurring simultaneously. This is normal and does create many premenopausal symptoms that we accept as part of the aging process. Now, many premenopausal women in their mid to late 30s, as well as many women in the menopausal stage, are overloaded with estrogen. At the same time, they are suffering from progesterone deficiency because of the severe drop in the physiological production during this period. There is then insufficient progesterone to counteract the amount of estrogen in our body. And it is most noticeable among perimenopausal women who do not ovulate, which is quite common. You may have a fairly normal cycle, but no egg is released and very little progesterone is produced. Now, it's not the absolute deficiency of estrogen or progesterone, but rather a relative dominance of estrogen and possible deficiency of progesterone that is the main cause of health problems when they're not in balance. The end result? Excess of estrogen relative to progesterone, and that adds up to estrogen dominance, and that is bad. Now, a woman reaches menopause naturally around 50, but it could be, if you're healthy and juicing, and women in this audience, it could be 60. Or as a result of having your ovary surgically removed. Until recently, doctors routinely prescribed hormone replacement therapy, a bad thing. Never, never, never take it, mainly for menopausal symptoms. And these prescription drugs are comprised of synthetic estrogen or the estrogen-progestin combination, and that's bad. But there are risks. Concerns about synthetic hormone replacement rose from the Women's Health Initiative clinical trials, whose purpose was to address the most common cause of death and disability, impaired quality of life in postmenopausal women. Guess what it is? Hormone replacement therapy, synthetic. For women, if you're taking estrogen, progesterone, or Prempro, which I believe should be outlawed, banned, never used, under any circumstances, you're going to increase your risk of a heart attack, breast cancer, stroke, blood clots, dementia, and colon rectal cancer at a very high percentage. And not only did this hormone therapy increase your risk of breast cancer, it also made tumors harder to detect, leading to potential dangerous delays in diagnosis. And for women taking estrogen alone, Premarin, preliminary results showed no increased risk of breast cancer or heart disease, but it did increase your risk of stroke. Again, bad. Now, birth control pills, which I'm opposed to, contain estrogen and contribute to the development or worsening of estrogen dominance. And depending upon the dosage, they can be very potent and linger for a long period of time in the body. A woman's natural cycle is composed of rising and falling levels of estrogen and progesterone, and birth control pills work by keeping estrogen at a sufficiently high level that they fool the body into thinking it is pregnant, therefore another pregnancy cannot occur. Cramping, painful, and irregular periods are often due to a deficiency of progesterone and an excess of estrogen. And estrogen alone, birth control pills, the most commonly prescribed pills on the market now, often compound the problem. That's why some women have intolerable estrogen-induced side effects when they're on birth control pills, such as weight gain, mood swings, and breast tenderness. For our WMYE audience, we're going to say goodbye, but continue listening to this very important information by going to GaryNoll.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Now, what is not usually mentioned or even known is the metabolism of birth control pills by the liver, and it requires extra amounts of B-complex vitamins, vitamin C, magnesium, and zinc. That means that if you're taking birth control pills for years at a time, well, you're creating nutrient deficiencies. That's going to lead to weight gain, fluid retention, mood swings, depression, heart disease. All can arise because of nutrient deficiencies due to estrogen dominance. Now, we're constantly assaulted by estrogens in our environment, from the food we eat and the chemicals we use. Estrogen mimickers in the form of chemicals like xenoestrogens, and food and plants mimic the action of estrogen produced in cells. Now, evidence is steadily growing that these chemicals and other hormone-mimicking substances are implicated in a wide range of our health problems. And xeno, X-E-N-O, literally means foreign. Therefore, xenoestrogens means foreign estrogens. And there are about 70,000 registered chemicals for use in the United States that have hormonal effects in addition to toxic effects. And the synergistic effects of exposure to many xenoestrogens are well documented, but largely unknown. You're going to find them in pesticides, plastics, fuels, drugs, and synthetic chemicals. Now, the sources, if you eat meat, canned foods, plastic food wraps, styrofoam cups, industrial waste, personal care product, herbicides, pesticide, paints, lacquers, solvents, plant estrogens, car exhaust, indoor toxins, cosmetic birth control pills, spermicides, detergents, artificial scents, all of them, and air purifiers and fresheners. Then you have what are called the phytoestrogens. Phyto means plant, are naturally occurring estrogenic compounds that are found in a variety of foods we talk about all the time. Their chemical structure resembles estrogen. These compounds are generally weak estrogens in comparison to real estrogen and xenoestrogens. But in a body that is already experiencing too much estrogen, adding more will not solve the problem. And some of the strongest phytoestrogens are found in soy and lignans like flax and clover, black cohosh, chasteberry, and dong quai. And so we want to make sure that we first balance out the estrogens in the body. That's where simple blood chemistry and working with someone who knows what they're talking about will work. And for that, you want to make sure that the phytoestrogens have been shown to inhibit the conversion of T4 to the active T3 thyroid hormone, and that can trigger hypothyroidism. That's why cleansing and detoxifying has to be done so you don't end up with estrogen dominance. But lifestyle is crucial. Stress causes adrenal gland exhaustion and reduced progesterone output. This tilts the estrogen to progesterone ratios in favor of estrogen, bad thing. So extra estrogen in turn causes insomnia and anxiety. Wonder why you can't sleep at night? Wonder why you're anxious? How about estrogen dominance? In the female, a large part of hormonal balance is controlled by the three major glands, the adrenal gland, the thyroid gland, and the ovaries. Maintaining a proper balance among these three glands is of critical importance in any estrogen dominance recovery program. Excess estrogen affects both the thyroid gland and the adrenal glands, and in turn, you end up with adrenal exhaustion and estrogen dominance. That means you're going to have poor circulations in the hands and feet. You're going to be overweight. You're going to be fatigued. Your hair is going to fall out. And you're going to have insomnia. You're also going to end up more depressed. And the wide variety of prescription pills like sleeping pills and antidepressants, guess what? They create estrogen dominance and deficiencies in progesterone. So what you have to know is this. If you have irregular menstruation, weight gain, hair loss, depression, fatigue, thyroid dysfunction, adrenal gland fatigue, headaches, migraines, severe menstrual cramps, heavy period, and if you have endometriosis, uterine fibroids, fibrocystic breast, polycystic ovarian syndrome, breast tumors, infertility, thickening of the uterine lining, accelerated aging, miscarriage, anxiety, joint muscle pain, decreased libido, insomnia, dry eyes, autoimmune dysfunction, fibromyalgia, there's a high probability that you have hormonal imbalance, estrogen dominance, and progesterone deficiencies. Now you have to detoxify. If you detoxify and you get rid of estrogen dominance, then you can end up helping yourself, especially help yourself if you have breast tissue that's over tender, swelling, fibrocystic breast. If you have excess estrogen stimulation, may lead to endometriosis, hyperplasia, heavy irregular menses, menstrual cramping, and uterine fibroids. So you need to have all meat gone, dairy gone, de-stress yourself, lose the weight, and then use natural progesterone cream. Also, the most important nutrients that bring down the estrogen would be magnesium, zinc, 100 milligrams of B-complex, 400 units of vitamin D, which will help reduce breast tenderness and fibroid inflammation, DIM, and myomin, M-Y-O-M-I-N, and detoxify with calcium D-glucarate, and then phytoestrogens and from your green juices. Now, DIM, in conclusion, that's diindolmethane, DIM. It's a powerful metabolizer of estrogen, assisting in removing excess estrogen and benefiting conditions associated with estrogen dominance. So supplementation with DIM can help promote proper estrogen levels through pre- and perimenopausal years, and in men experiencing higher estrogen levels, that can help you. And these conditions include uterine fibroid tumors in women, fibrocystic breast, glandular dysfunction, and myopin, M-Y-O-M-I-N, is a formula of Chinese herbs that promote proper heart hormonal balance. And like DIM, myomin also metabolizes excess estrogen, inhibits aromatase, which can reduce the levels of bad estrogens, like estradiol and estrione, and promotes the production of good estrogen, estriol, E-S-T-R-I-O-L. For men and women, this action prevents the conversion of testosterone into the bad estrogens and leads to the unhindered production of more estriol and from progesterone and DHEA and other hormones. Additionally, some of the herbs may promote shrinkage of tumors and cysts. And of the two, DIM is a stronger metabolizer of estrogen. And natural progesterone creams can help you tremendously. And D-glucarate is a botanical extract found in fruits and vegetables that can be beneficial in helping to remove toxins and excess hormones because they become reabsorbed back into the bloodstream where they can be deposited in fatty tissue. So that's that, and that, of course, along with cleansing the liver, reducing stress, balancing your hormones, and do not heat food in plastic, do not drink out of plastic containers like styrofoam, exercise every day, and then you should be a different person. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you very much. I look forward to sharing more with you. And now, one of America's foremost experts on the environment, Dr. Stephen Barnett. Please stay with us.
The show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.